Hey friends, welcome to the Victor Marks Podcast with Victor Marks, founder of All Things Possible Ministries. Welcome to the show where we bring you real conversations faced with life's hard truths, stories of redemption, and the latest from the front lines. Whether you're on the road, getting your day started, or finally settling in, we've got an exciting new episode planned for you. So let's dive in to today's show.
All right, welcome to the Victor Marks Show. If you didn't tune in yesterday, you will hear that I am not Victor, right? I don't have that Louisiana drawl. I'm a Wisconsin boy, so you'll get some of the you knows and outs that you'll hear from me, as well as our guest, Adam Kinnikin, who's even from further north than where I grew up. He's a Canadian boy. So we met with Adam yesterday, and we talked about a variety of things. We want to learn a little bit more about him today. Where we left off was some of the high-tech techniques that are being used to counter sex trafficking out there. If you didn't listen in yesterday, I want to remind you who Adam is. He's the host and producer of The Tactical Breakdown. It's a podcast for first responders, military personnel, law enforcement, and their families. He's a former infantry officer with the Canadian Armed Forces, who during his training, he quite literally broke his back, which pivoted his career path into becoming an instructor and a trainer. He works now for both the Justice and Solicitor General for Alberta and Manitoba Department of Justice. He's an active member of the International Law Enforcement Educators and Training Association. He also trains, coaches, and consults security agencies across Canada. Adam, you are married to Megan and have three children. Let's start there a little bit with your family, and then we will jump right into some of the things that we discussed yesterday.
Yeah, well, first would be the update is four. We now have four children. They're all under 4 years old. But it's a crazy, hectic household, that's for sure, but wouldn't change it for the world.
So again, for those folks that didn't tune in yesterday, bring them up to speed on where you and I met and really what we're trying to promote with this opportunity on CSN Radio.
Yeah, well, we got hooked up last year for the very first International Law Enforcement Training Summit, which we ran in July. We had over 40 instructors. We put together over 80 hours of training content, and we had about 10,000 officers from 76 countries attend the training. And so when you and I got connected, we talked about doing something in the counter sex trafficking realm, bringing in your experience from the military and your NGO experience and that work, and then tying it into what law enforcement officers could utilize for training. And that was a massive hit. So from there, we created the International Summit on Counter Sex Trafficking, which is taking place June 22nd through 24th this year, and will be available until the end of July for anybody who attends and registers.
So I am a proud participant. I've got a couple of different tracks that I'll be teaching in this. Again, like you said, the summit begins 22 to 24 June, but then people can access it into July. So like you just mentioned, 10,000 law enforcement officers from across the globe participated in this last summit. And now we're drilling down very specifically to just talk about human and sex trafficking. So if you are personally interested to attend this summit, we encourage you to do that. Also, if you're interested in sponsoring law enforcement, that's one of the things All Things Possible is doing, is we're sponsoring up to 100 different law enforcement officers to participate in this training. So it is a global focus. We've talked about the universalities of exploitation and oppression and trauma and the dynamics of sex trafficking and that manipulation. And where we left off yesterday, you were talking a little bit about your recent experience connecting with folks in Greece. Can you pick up where we left off there and talk a little bit about the universalities that you are seeing between what's happening in Europe currently and how that it crosses straight over into the dynamics that we see here in North America?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I'll preface this by saying I'm in no way, shape, or form an expert when it comes to human or sex trafficking. And all of my experience has been gained over the last year speaking with people like yourself and just trying to be as much of a sponge as possible. One of the fantastic organizations that we teed up over there with was Step Up, Stop Slavery. So another fantastic organization. They're run out of Cyprus. We know that there's commonalities when it comes to human trafficking, but it's so interesting to literally hear it from somebody. We set up a call. They're 8 to 9 hours ahead, depending on where you are in North America, And so first thing in the morning for me, it's their afternoon, evening, and we're having conversations. We share these shared experiences, which is the frustration of dealing with all the red tape that happens between agencies and organizations, dealing with the understanding that we have to change the way that officers look at victims of trafficking, and understanding that, for example, you know, an officer has a vehicle interdiction, they pull somebody over, they're walking up to the car, there's a single male driver, and then there's nobody in the passenger seat, but there's two young girls in the back seat, right? What we want that officer to do is, we're not saying like, hey, every vehicle stop that you do is going to be a trafficker and a victim. Like, that's ridiculous. But what we're trying to get them to do is say, okay, I got to put my sensors on here and start checking off the boxes when I see these little red flags, right? So red flag number one, why are there two people in the back and nobody in the passenger seat? That's weird. Okay, I'm going to put that in the back and reference that later. I talked with a gentleman. He seems cordial enough, right? Wondering why I pulled him over. But then I go to speak to the young females in the back, and they tell me where I can stick it, or I'll try to, I don't know what the rules are here on your show, so I'll keep it PG. So, and then the officer automatically, as human beings, what do? We know how we work, right? If somebody yells and swears at you, usually you'll take offense to it. And now that person in some way, shape or form becomes an enemy, or in the officer's eyes, they become a suspect. From that point, we've already kind of ruined the relationship between the officer and the victim if they are a potential victim. So what we want the officer to do, instead of taking the approach of, now that's a suspect and I have to treat them like, because they're acting harshly towards me, we have to say, you have to understand that if it's potentially a victim, that if that's potentially a trafficker, when you were walking up to that car, the trafficker turned around and told them, if you say anything, I will kill you. If you say anything, I'm going to throw you to the boys when we get back, or any variation or colorful thought that you could think of that they would use as a threat. And so we want the officer to just understand that that's a possibility. So don't automatically jump off the deep end and now they're the bad guy, because that's not the case. And that's just one out of a thousand different scenarios that we could talk about, that where officers interact with victims on a daily basis, and maybe they don't understand or they don't recognize it. We have an amazing course that we're putting together for this event that's going to be going through post accreditation. Every state has their own post board, which is peace officer standards and training. And so the officer can maintain their licensing, but it's based off of the training and knowledge that we're putting together for this event, for sex trafficking specifically. And in that, we talk a lot about imagery and iconography. So we talk about, what is branding, right? Tattoos or scars or things that you'll see on a person mean certain things. And if you are adept enough to notice it and take note of that in some way, shape or form, that becomes one of those, another red flag. So you start putting all these flags together, and then all of a sudden you say, I need to take a deeper look into this. And that's really the whole goal of this entire event, is we want officers to understand what to look for. And once they've identified that there potentially could be something here, it's what is the next step, and tying in that victim based approach throughout the whole thing, and having victims advocates involved from the very beginning. That's such a key component that a lot of people are missing, is tying in the victims advocates, tying in the prosecution offices, tying in the investigators and everybody else from the very beginning, so that we create these prosecuted cases where we don't re-traumatize victims by having them go through 35 interviews. That is a universal aspect of human trafficking. And it doesn't matter if you're in the States, if you're in Canada, if you're in Australia, Europe, or anywhere else. That, those are processes that can be standardized across the board.
And one of the statistics that I also think is a universality is that less than 1% of these pimps and traffickers are ever prosecuted. So when we talk about this crime, it's heavy and it's depressing. But you and I both look at this as a really hopeful new frontier. And it's what I say often. Imagine if we went from 1% of traffickers being prosecuted to 2%, and then 4%, and then to 8%. It would absolutely change the face of this crime. The simple thing that needs to happen is the risk-reward ratio has to be interrupted. Right now, if you can sell women, you have a 99% chance of getting away with selling women. Now, disregard the fact that the product you're selling is a human being. But if that person is going into that with with that mindset, it's a logical business decision. The other thing that I find fascinating about the crime is there are so many different vulnerabilities. Like you just discussed a couple of those indicators. This is a business, and like any business, there's competition and they have to deconflict their product and they have to synchronize their operations. There are rules that they follow. So that simple one that I want to circle back to with that law enforcement is you walk up to that traffic stop, just like you said, there's a man in the driver's seat and one or two females in the back seat. Now, is that an Uber driver? If it's an Uber driver, it makes sense, right? But if they're in a relationship, that isn't the common way that people travel. So like you just said, that there's that one little indicator that they check off. And then you gave the example of the females in the back being exceptionally rude. Or it could be something like they really don't know where they are. You know, they don't really understand what the time of day is. There's so many little things that can get checked off for just the simple patrol officer. So I want to circle back from indicators to talk a little bit about psychology. We mentioned that yesterday. One of the things that I talk about is I go back to that Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Again, I'm going to give everybody a minute to shake the cobwebs out of their skulls from high school psychology or Psych 101, that pyramid, Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And on that base level, you have security and subsistence. Those are the things that you have in order to move towards love and self-actualization is food, shelter, and safety. And too often, when people are delving into this crime, they're coming into it from places where you and I are at. That is not where these victims live. These victims live in a state of fear and anxiety and oppression where that trafficker controls where they eat, where they sleep, what they say.
Yeah, so the one thing that jumps to my mind when we talk psychology is the term dissociative behavior. And so we can talk about that from a trafficker perspective, but also from the victim perspective, right? We talk about trauma, but we can also talk about what you had said with the trafficker, which is people have to understand that there's human beings in this world that will literally walk across the street and stab you in the throat because they don't like the color of shirt that you're wearing or whatever it is. And I'm not being facetious. I'm literally telling you that there's people in this world that will kill you for no other reason than they thought it was a good idea at the time. So I can't imagine myself ever doing that. Therefore, nobody would ever do that to me. And we have this disassociation with reality, which is I'm just going to continue on thinking that I can do my own thing and I live in my own little bubble, and it that means I'm not affecting anybody else. But everybody has their own reality. And so for these traffickers, they see it like you had said, for them, a lot of them, this is a business decision. It is a way for them to make money, right? Make bank so that they can buy cars, they can buy the jewelry, they can go to the bar, maybe because they're paying off their, they're paying child support. And they have they're paying off their ex-wife, and they have to pay for two houses and their cost of living and their family's cost of living. And people think human trafficker, they think it's like I could draw what a human trafficker looks like. Well, good luck, because they come in all shapes and sizes. And a lot of the times, you know, it's funny we say this, but it's kind of like you see those funny interviews where it's like, an active shooter or mass shooter event, and they're like, oh, he was the nicest person. I never expected a thing. It's crazy how much we disassociate actual human behavior and human pattern behavior because we ourselves can't fathom that a human being would actually do that to another human being. And so I think that's a really interesting concept from a psychological perspective that in this training event, we have information for educators. We have information for community programs and things like that for teachers. And like, here's what to look for in your students, right? Like all of these things, because we want to let the community know that it's not just law enforcement that's going to solve this problem. And in fact, the biggest gains that we're going to make is by educating everybody else on what to look for, not just law enforcement. Because law enforcement, I mean, if you understand anything or you've seen anything recently with the way law enforcement works, is they're asked to do about 70,000 things a day. And they can't devote 100% of their time and energy onto investigating cases like this, because usually proactive work in human trafficking doesn't exist. Unless you have a very specialized unit, most officers, it's a reactive investigation where it starts with a domestic, it starts with a tip line, it starts with a traffic stop, but it's reactive. It's already been happening. It's not trying to stop it before it starts, which is what we want to try to do here. And I know, Jeff, that's what you guys are big on too. It's how do we get this from ever happening in the first place? And it starts by educating everybody as to the realities of the situation.
And we talked a little bit about those indicators, you know, but you hit upon something that's really important. And at ATP, what our arm of counter sex trafficking does, our program, we focus on helping law enforcement get to that threshold of probable cause, reasonable suspicion. Because when you talk about that traffic stop and there's two young ladies in the backseat of a car, and you know what appears to be a thug driving, there's no law broken there. So for a law enforcement agent to continue to dig into something, he must have reasonable suspicion or probable cause. And that's in that little sweet spot space that ATP works with through open source intelligence gathering and other indicators that we stack up to push to law enforcement. So you talked about this disassociation, and Victor's the first person that I heard use these terms, manifestation of evil. And what's interesting with these predators, like you commented on, it's not what you think. They are incredibly charismatic because their control mechanisms begin with how they're able to manipulate these victims. Yes, violence is almost always a component of it. But the manifestation of evil that you and I have confronted in our lives, I don't think there's anything more diabolical than these pimps and traffickers. I have more respect for ISIS and Al-Qaeda, these men that I've faced overseas, than I do for a trafficker. Because even these radical Islamists in Al-Qaeda and ISIS, they actually believe in something bigger than themselves. Some of them are just thugs. You know, some of them are just are petty criminals. But this trafficker is doing nothing but completely manipulating these young women. My life as a soldier, you know, the things that you've seen, sometimes you tell your war stories, right? You talk about things that happened to you, and people have a hard time understanding how you cope with that, how you manage with the horrors of war, all these different things. To me, it's fairly easy, the way that I cope with the things that I've seen and done and been confronted with. But I've had a difficult time trying to figure out how these women deal with sex trafficking. You've got a young lady who's expected to conduct 10, 15, 20 sex acts a day. You know what I mean? Like, think about that. You've got a young girl who goes into a room and some strange man comes in to take advantage of her and ask her to do crazy sex acts for a half hour, an hour, then she cleans up, then the next one comes in, and she cleans up, and the next one comes in. She's got to make that quota. So I had a hard time understanding how does that person even function. But one day, a couple of years ago, I met a young lady in Los Angeles. She's a survivor of sex trafficking, and I sat across from her at this picnic table, and we were talking about this crime, and she was explaining to me how she manages it. And I realized, Adam, I looked across at this little girl and I realized, oh, she's a soldier just like me, just like the things that I've had to deal with overseas. I stick them in that little metal box in my mind. I lock it up and I tuck it away. And then I go on with my life. So I'll never forget that epiphany moment when I sat there across from this little girl who couldn't be more different than me. Me and a guy, a white dude in his 50s from Wisconsin, sitting across from on a picnic table from an 18-year-old African-American girl in LA. And I realized we're the same.
Yeah, man, that's powerful. You know, we talked about trauma yesterday. We're talking about trauma today. You talk about these experiences and how these adolescents, how they cope. My brain automatically went back to a book written by General Romeo Dallaire called Shake Hands with the Devil. And it was about the Rwandan genocide and child soldiers and the experience that he had dealing with child soldiers. And again, it's the same idea, right? It's trauma that they have no choice over. You either deal with it or you don't. You deal with the consequences of not dealing with it. So For them, it's a survival mechanism. For some reason, we have this idea in the back of our minds where it's like, well, if they didn't want to do it, they just wouldn't do it. Like, we need people to take a step back and realize that that's not how this works. You know, even just educating people about, you know, how does a grooming process happen? Where does it start? What does that even mean? What does grooming even mean? What does it mean to have them completely tied in to their trafficker, right? Usually the thing that most people are familiar with is terms like Stockholm syndrome, right? Where people become attached to their captor. The psychological aspects of it are the exact same thing. We have different terms for it depending on the situation. It's all the same idea. It's our brain's way of coping with the trauma and the stress and the situation that we're in so that we can survive. You go back to Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Underneath the entire triangle, it's survive, right? And so at the very base level, it's how do I survive? And how I survive right now is by doing everything this person wants me to do so that I don't end up dead. And, you know, when we start really peeling back the layers to it and start having these really raw conversations that make people uncomfortable, that's where we have to go, right? We need to start digging deeper, which is hopefully what we'll be able to accomplish by putting this whole thing together.
Yeah, man. I mean, we could talk for hours and you know, I do want to highlight, I just finished up the production of an anti-sex trafficking awareness course. I think by the time this airs, it should be available at ATP. I think it's about an hour and a half long. But I want to encourage people to check out the summit that Adam is in charge of. It's the June summit. Dates go from 22 to 24 June. You can continue to access it. And it is the deepest look into sex trafficking and human trafficking around the globe that absolutely exists. So if any of these discussions over the last 2 days piqued your interest, you've got to check that out. So again, Adam, I want to thank you for coming on. You know, we'll definitely have you back again. There's always more to talk about. But one of the things that Victor does, and he's known for, if you know this or not, is on the Victor Mark Show, we close with two simple questions each time. And one of the first ones is, and you don't really know Victor and Eileen, so I'm going to paraphrase it a little bit. What is your perception of us over here at All Things Possible? Or even, you know, your perceptions of my involvement with the organization?
Well, it's interesting. So my first exposure to Victor was actually from a martial arts thing that I had seen. So it had nothing to do with this. And so that was my first experience. And it's always fascinating to me to see how people, and this ties into you as well. It's who would have thought, you know, 15 years ago doing what we were doing, that this is where we would be having this conversation right now on this topic. The coolest thing, I would use one word to describe your organization, you and Victor, and that's adaptable. And so that's what I would go with on that.
I like that. You know, yeah, it's interesting. Who would have thunk we're all working together in this space? But it's not that far-fetched when you recognize that something has to be done. And if not me, then who? And if not now, then when? And we need to have more men stepping up and entering this fray, helping other young men grow and how to build relationships with young women and hold them in high esteem. And how to build the self-confidence in girls and young women so they don't fall prey to these manipulations. We share that calling, Adam. And then our last question, you know this, you're confronted by this when you become a soldier. You have to kind of look at what happens to you as you commit your life to a cause. We're all going to die one day. So, Adam, what happens to Adam Kinnikin when you take your last breath?
I hope that when I kick the bucket, what happens is that I have a bunch of family and friends and people that are able to say he did something right and we want to carry on with what he's done already. For me, that's the biggest thing. It's not about what happens to me. It's about what happens after me.
I like that. And I think that's unique. And what I am proud to say with you, Adam, is you are shaping and impacting the globe for the better. So there is no doubt in my mind, when you kick it, there will be family and friends. There will be family and friends sitting around, respectful, honoring your life's work, and picking up where you left off. So Adam, again, thanks for this interview. There's so much we can learn from you and the work that you're doing. If you're a member of our armed forces, law enforcement, or emergency responders of any kind, make sure to check out Adam's podcast at The Tactical Breakdown. You can visit him at thebreakdown.ca. Again, that's thebreakdown.ca. Don't miss this upcoming summit. You will not have an opportunity to learn more and understand more and how to help save children that are being exploited in human trafficking and being exploited for sex. So again, we thank you for joining in. I'm Jeff Teagues, filling in for Victor Marks. Thank you for joining us on this edition of The Victor Marks Show.
Thanks for joining us for today's episode. We'd love to stay connected with you and invite you to the conversation beyond this podcast. You can check out more of the work we're doing around the world at victormarks.com, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, all linked in the show notes. Be sure to drop us a comment in the review section if today's show has impacted you in any way or if there's anything you'd like to hear more of. We're always encouraged to hear from you. Thanks for spending your time with us. Until next time. We'll be right back.